President Obama will deliver his fifth State of the Union address tomorrow night. It's an interesting fulcrum point of his presidency, where the attention begins to shift to questions of legacy and perhaps maybe even throwing some red meat to members of the Democratic base as they look forward to future elections. So how have second-term presidents used their State of the Union addresses? Are they ever anything more than lame duck laundry lists? Let's get some perspective from Julian Zelizer. He's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, and he joins us from the Princeton studios. Julian, great to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, talk broadly about second-term presidents and the State of the Union address, especially later in their second term. What purpose does the speech serve?
I think there's a number of purposes. The first is obviously to try to help members of your own party, either in midterm elections or the presidential election that will pick your successor. They're also important in trying to explain who you are and try to state your record to the public and to the historians in some ways before your time is over. And finally, they still can be a mechanism to try to get issues on the table. Even if you're not going to get a lot, you want to try. So the State of the Union still has some value, even when you're a second-term president, even when you're looking more and more like a lame duck.
So let's talk. We're going to talk a little bit more about legacy in just a minute. But I want to pick up on the point you just made about big issues that presidents still try to tackle. For example, President Obama is expected to talk about the challenges of income inequality in America tomorrow night, a major issue for the country right now. Have other presidents pointed to other similarly large and very complex problems in their second-term State of the Unions? And I guess more importantly, have they actually been able to do anything about them in the waning months of their presidencies?
Sure. I mean, you know, Franklin Roosevelt in 1941 basically justified and outlined what our ideas of democracy were and what we would be fighting for during World War II, which the United States was not part of yet. And that was about as big a theme as you could put forward. There are also efforts to do smaller themes. Bill Clinton talked a lot about the deficit during his final State of the Union addresses, which was an issue he really grabbed hold of and tried to steal away from Republicans. So presidents can still do that in those second terms, and sometimes they can be effective at actually implementing what they talk about.
Let's talk for a moment about President Obama and how his State of the Union addresses have evolved in his years in office, because for example, in his first official State of the Union, which was in January 2010, he played some hardball politics when he called out the Supreme Court for its ruling on corporate money in politics. Let's listen to that.
Last week, the Supreme Court reversed a century of law that I believe will open the floodgates for special interests, including foreign corporations, to spend without limit in our elections.
Now, Justice Samuel Alito famously appeared to mouth the words "not true" during that address. I mean, of course, the justice of the court sitting right there in the front during the State of the Union. How have you seen President Obama, his evolution of how he uses this address over his two terms?
Well, that was certainly a very tense moment, and it came a year after not the State of the Union, but an appearance between a joint session of Congress where one Republican said, you lie to the president in a discussion of immigration. So initially, they were quite contentious, and Obama did try to use them to outline a vision for what he wanted to do. They changed after the 2010 midterm elections. There was much more talk about deficit reduction, and the president tried to balance those kinds of issues, austerity issues, with continued discussion of the ideas that animated him, like investing in America. I think recently he's trying to become more assertive. I think the last State of the Union was a little more muscle behind it, and I think this one will be the same. Again, he feels in some ways less constrained since he's not running for re-election and wants to at least put up a fight and lay out a set of ideas for himself and for the party.
I suppose political strategists can debate until they're blue in the face as to how much that's good for his party overall. But Julian, it's always a pleasure to talk to you for your historical perspective, of course. So let's reach further back in history and talk about other second-term State of the Unions. You had mentioned World War II a little bit ago, and we've got a little bit of tape here from President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Technically not a second-term State of the Union for him in 1941, but he talked about the four freedoms: freedom of speech, worship, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. And it was 11 months before the United States declared war on Japan. Again, this is 1941, so let's listen.
That is no vision of a distant millennium. It is a definite basis for a kind of world attainable in our own time and generation.
What's important about this speech, Julia?
It's very important, and it's a model of a speech where a president can use the State of the Union to advance a certain set of ideas. This is a moment when isolationism is still quite strong in the United States. There's a lot of resistance in Congress to having the U.S. fully enter into World War II, but FDR understood that's what the nation had to do. So he tries to define what democracy is about, what the international struggle is all about, with a description of these four freedoms. And it was very compelling. It remains a compelling statement about what the United States can try to achieve ideally. And I think it did set the tone for the intervention into the war that would take place over the next few years. So it was a very important use of rhetoric to try to galvanize public opinion and try to weaken congressional opponents to a war that was becoming inevitable for the United States to enter into.
Now, a completely different set of circumstances if we fast forward to 1974 and Richard Nixon. I mean, obviously, different generation. Nixon, a much beleaguered president at that time. And he spoke during that State of the Union before the very lawmakers who were starting to talk about impeaching him as a special prosecutor investigated the Watergate scandal. So let's listen to that.
I believe the time has come to bring that investigation and the other investigations of this matter to an end. 1 year of Watergate is enough.
Now, in that same speech, President Nixon said he wouldn't resign, but then he goes ahead and does so August 1974.
Yeah, I mean, this is an incredibly interesting speech to hear, and it's a very powerful reminder as to how events can completely overtake what a president says. And so there Nixon is fighting. He's offering a last stand, but in the end, he would be swept away and have to resign a few months later.
Julian, we've got about 20 seconds or so left. But on that point, how much do you think President Obama is going to be thinking about his legacy as he speaks tomorrow night?
I think he's thinking a lot about his legacy. He gave a lengthy interview to The New Yorker where he's clearly thinking, wondering, and hoping in some ways to achieve as much as he can in a very limited set of circumstances. So I think everything he does from this point in, from speeches to executive power, is going to be about building that legacy as best he can.
Julian Zelizer is a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University's Woodrow Wilson School, giving us a historical perspective on President Obama's State of the Union speech tomorrow night. Julian, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Here and Now.